Joining us now, we have Scott Raines. He is the Executive Vice President of Baptist Healthcare and the President of Baptist Hospital. Scott, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News.
Hey, thank you. Good to be back.
Absolutely.
Good to hear from you.
Oh, it's good to have you, sir. So, you know, I just wanted to start with this. Obviously, our community has experienced a terrible weather event with Sally, and I just wanted to find out how that has been affecting the work that you guys are doing at Baptist Healthcare.
Yeah, well, yeah, quite the blow for sure. Saying that, true to form, Baptist has responded and reacted accordingly. So while we experienced the hit, if you will, at around 4:35 in the morning, within 36 hours, we had all of our operations back up to normal. So we entered into an instant command type of environment for a brief period of time and lasted for 2-3 days worth. But within that period of time, we were back fully operational again within a day and a half. So we hunkered down for a bit, took the shot, and responded accordingly. So our goal and our vision is to be the trusted partner, and I believe that we've certainly fulfilled that, Andrew.
So you guys were able to either stay on like generator power, get power back on, main power back on, staffing, all the normal functions from your guys' perspective, you're basically back to where you need to be.
Absolutely. And not just
great.
Here on the main campus, but at our Gulf Breeze Hospital, our Jay Hospital, and our physician practices. So we did have those practices shut down for a day. And then they started gradually opening back up as water and electricity were restored. So the only thing that's holding those offices up is just that, the restoration of water and electricity, and therefore connectivity. Our hospitals are built to have that self-sufficiency for a period of time. So we didn't need water. We had it. We didn't need electricity. We had it. Now, the commercial supply of water being shut off was a challenge for a brief period of time, but we didn't miss a beat.
Well, that is really good news. And, you know, I know you guys have planned heavily for this, but as we learned in Sally, a lot of us planned really aggressively to be prepared for these things, and our plans didn't always manifest fully. And that's so, you know, I'm glad to hear that that worked out well for y'all. Have you guys...
Question there. I mean, again, to your point, and it's true for all the health systems throughout the country, and especially in this region, we do disaster preparedness for these types of things, and so we practice, and it's helpful because practice is never quite like the game. And I'm certainly not calling a hurricane a game, but you know the analogy that I'm using. But we're prepared, and kudos to the team. They're outstanding.
Well, I know one of the things that is just, you know, I just wonder how much this is affecting anybody, and particularly you, since we have you on the line. You know, many of your employees were affected by this, and because employees are staff and staff is care, you know, I assume when you say everything is functional, you mean totally inclusive, including staff and their ability to get to work and have a safe place to sleep, whether at home or at work or anything like that.
Yeah, I think it's true with healthcare workers, again, overall. It's certainly true within our organization. It's others before self. And so, you know, we had team members here that were taking care of patients and one another while their car was being destroyed or their home was being impacted, only to know and find those things out after they were, you know, relieved of their shift. And so the inventory of employees and team members that are experiencing that and our physician partners is one that continues to grow as we learn and know more. And then we have, you know, relief funds and the ability to help ourselves from within. We call it our Helping Hands Fund that our foundation operates for us, if you will, and secures. So yeah, we're in the process of caring and healing for ourselves as well. Great point, Andrew.
Well, that's good to hear. Now, the other, you know, I had two reasons that I wanted to have you on, Scott. One was, you know, to make sure you guys got through the storm okay. And by the way, I know and you guys have been kind of operating with West Florida and Ascension Sacred Heart as kind of a unified three-way front. I, without putting you on the spot to speak for them, can I ask you, I mean, are they also back up and running, made through it okay?
They are. I've spoken with Don Rudolph and Gay Nord, the respective CEOs of those two organizations, and while they may be in different states of effective operations and being back up, I know that they're in good stead and are right in lockstep along with us as far as their ability to care. And
great.
We did speak with one another throughout the event, episodically, and the community should know that we're here and are all capable of meeting your healthcare needs.
Well, that's fantastic news. As I was getting ready to say, the other thing I wanted to have you on to talk about is we are all obviously very focused on recovery from Sally, but
right.
That doesn't mean that anything has changed with regards to this pandemic. The disease
that's
doesn't
right.
care that we're going through a flood or rainfall or anything
that's
else.
Right.
The disease is doing what it's trying to do regardless of what we suffer. So how have things been on the coronavirus front for y'all? You know, we had cases trending down.
Right.
Pretty
right.
substantially before all of this hit. Are we still in that place? Are we to green yet? Kind of what's your assessment?
Yeah, I mean, again, the stoplight colors were, you know, we arbitrarily assigned, if you will, with some data among ourselves. That's not something that's nationally embraced. That's a local health system kind of agreement. And
sure.
Yes, I would characterize we are definitely in the green. We had that peak in July, and whereby we had, you know, we were approaching 300 hospitalizations among the three of us, and we saw that start to diminish, you know, early August, if you will, late July, early August, and it's continued to diminish down to where we're well below 100 admissions collectively. In fact, below 70 at this point overall. And that is held true with the opening of schools and Labor Day holiday and then going back to school, although obviously schools are out right now because of Sally. We're feeling pretty good, and we were suspicious of what might transpire there. So kudos to everyone for doing the right things. We firmly believe that social distancing and masking and hand washing are difference makers. And we do believe that. We know that. And so kudos to everyone for doing right things in those areas. And, you know, we're cautiously optimistic that we're in a place where we can maintain this.
Well, that's, you know, that's what I've been seeing. And it's great to hear it come from your guys' perspective. You know, I've been a believer in those practices from the very beginning. I know you have been advocating them. The one question that people kind of haven't necessarily been asking the last couple of days, but were definitely asking right before the storm hit was, hey, at what point do we get to where you say to the mayor or anybody else, we don't need to have this requirement for masking in place anymore? I assume you guys have chatted about this a little bit. Do you have a recommendation for that?
Yeah, I think, you know, I certainly do not want to speak for the mayor, but I think that at this point in time, that is absolutely something that is being considered. Relief or some movement,
like a loosening
in that perspective. I think that's on the fairly near horizon. I wouldn't say that I know that definitively, but we have had some discussions as to when does he think he can make that move. He's asking those questions. We're sharing our data daily. You know, we still are going to be, as hospitals, we're committed to the behaviors and the practices of masking and the like. So we're going to still be rather rigorous and with our visitation policies and still maintain a control, because, you know, we are hospitals. But what is decided upon for your other businesses throughout the city is something that the mayor, I know, has as top of mind, and he's going to make a good, right, informed decision. And I think that's on the very, very near horizon.
Hey, and which is all, you know, I'm sure people hearing this are very eager to find out how that might transition. Just, you know,
yeah.
Obviously we want to beat the disease, but we also want to have as much normalcy as we can.
Absolutely.
I did want to ask you just your sense of things. It's been my impression that, you know, the sort of case mortality rate, serious incidents of, for example, hospitalization, that stuff has all trended down as well, even if in some cases the incidence of disease hasn't. I mean, the case I keep thinking about is we had, 700 test positive at Century, about 800 test positive at Santa Rosa Correctional Institution, and but one death between the two of them.
Yeah.
All deaths are significant, but it seems like either our treatments and or the disease itself has gotten less dangerous, if I want to say it that way. What is your sense about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, we still really don't know what the infection rate is, you know, from a total populace standpoint. What we do know is that the vulnerable are the ones that are impacted from an acuity standpoint the most. So I think you would agree with me that while, you know, there's vulnerable populations in prisons from the standpoint of health vulnerable, that's not quite the same as a skilled nursing facility.
Yeah.
And so what we see is in those situations where you have elderly individuals with other conditions that has them, you know, rendered to a skilled nursing type of facility, when those folks and other folks that might live at home but still have comorbidities, when they become infected with corona, with the coronavirus, with COVID-19, we know that they just simply get sicker versus a 30-year-old with no comorbidities.
Right.
And so I think that, Andrew, quite candidly, I think that's what we are seeing and what we see play out. That's not to say that 25-year-olds that get COVID-19 don't experience, you know, very, very acute illness and in some instances ultimately, you know, pass away. But the data shows that those numbers are incredibly small by comparison to 65, 75-year-olds and up who have comorbidities.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a long-winded answer to your question, but I, you know, what we see, the data says that is the answer.
Well, Scott, that's all useful information. And, you know, as you said, I mean, I understand that perspective, and that's helpful to remind us kind of, you know, some people are at direct risk from the virus. Other people are more at risk of becoming risks
that's
to
right.
others
that's
with the
great,
virus.
That's a great way of saying it. Yeah.
And so we all have a part to play, just like we do with the natural disaster as well. Scott Raines is the Executive Vice President of Baptist Healthcare and the President of Baptist Hospital. Scott, thanks so much for the time. Please continue to pass along our deep gratitude to the people that you work with and that work for you. And call us if you need anything. We're here to help in any way we can.
Andrew, thank you so much. We'll do that. And thank you for all that you do.